Hello, my name is Dave Hanratty and there will be no encore. Welcome to episode 38 of the No Encore Music Podcast, extravaganza spectacular of music podcasts. Joined, as always, by Cullen Morrigan.
Hello, how are you getting on?
I'm getting on well, man. I'm doing well. We don't have Craig. Oh, wait, we do have Craig this week.
Oh, Hunter Hurst Hanratty. That's a Sean Conroy special. He wanted Hunter, Triple H, mentioned it 3 weeks in a row, which we've now accomplished.
I'm delighted.
Stunning nickname.
That's really good.
Really good one, yeah. I think I've been trumped.
That might have been the one that I was thinking you'll never get.
Yeah, I was thinking as I was walking over, because it sounds like something you'd be anticipating.
I thought you were going to go with Hunter Hurst Hansley.
I was going to go with medicinal cannabis for the day that's in it. Because as we're recording, yeah, the doll is passing a bill that makes that
Craig,
not cannabis,
Craig's
but cannabis.
Craig's out of his mind on recreational drugs. Give me that one again. Hunter
Hurst Hanratty.
Okay. Yeah. That's really... wow. He was my favorite wrestler.
What happened?
I don't really watch wrestling.
The whole Stephanie
anymore.
Thing?
No, I thought he was great. Yeah, big Triple H guy.
He looks very old now. He always looked about 50, but now
he's nearly
looks,
50, I believe.
Yeah.
And he still hits the gym.
Yeah, asterisk. I think
he's
it's
a fair. Gigantic human being, and I hope he.
And it's a gigantic asterisk.
Let's move on. Cullen Morrigan
yes,
was kind of pumping iron of a different kind this week when you went to IKEA.
Yeah,
Kev from Red Enemy's favorite place in the world.
Yeah, also obviously a beloved place of the missus, coming from that part of the world. The half Swedish side
furniture
of her.
Store.
The half Swedish size of her just gets all sorts of excited. Yeah, so it was a lot of putting together flatback furniture for the week.
You went there twice.
Yeah, twice.
Oof.
Bit of a double header.
I don't think I've ever assembled something from IKEA. Is it as difficult as people say, or is it actually?
No,
grand?
It's not. But it's taxing, and inevitably, what always happens with me whenever I do anything with it is, the very first part of it, you're like, grand, this is definitely the right side up. I have it now, and then you get about halfway through, and you go, oh no, wait a minute, this was wrong. I have to go back and do it all over again.
Okay. And it's just nerve wracking when you're starting out as well.
Yeah, it's very nerve-wracking. I in my homestead, I have the same shelves that is on the album cover of M83's Hurry Up, We're Dreaming.
Oh, wow.
Is that part of your love for M83 explained?
I think it was genuinely kind of a happy coincidence. I was delighted. I was like, holy shit, this is great. But I don't know. It's like, you also had the Big Shop. This is a subculture, yeah. A fascination and a phenomenon that Cullen gets involved in.
Retail O'Regan over here.
I love it. I love how fascinated you are by this, Dave. It's, I don't know, I think it's just one of those base bits of being a grown-up where you start to plan a little bit in advance and you buy stuff that can last a month all in one go.
Yeah, but there's just something about the way that you sell it, you know? It's a real ritual for you.
Yeah.
Well, it happens regularly.
As rituals do.
Yeah. And you have to plan it out well, you see, like, so that you get the heavy stuff at the bottom of the trolley so that you don't put it in later and it squashes all of the breakable stuff that you might have in there.
Of course.
Hey listeners, can you tell that we didn't have much of a preamble this week?
I wanted to talk about weed some more, but whatever, no one seems to care.
Okay, let's get into the news. Let's get into the music news. And yeah, let's talk Spotify, because apparently we're all listening to the same thing, I guess. I am a Spotify subscriber. They've unveiled lists of the most streamed artists, songs and albums on the platform this year. For the second year in a row, Drake has been crowned their most streamed artist, attracting 4.7 billion streams in 2016.
I thought we were going to do a whole build-up where we did the top five, but okay, it's Drake.
Despite his album, Underwhelming. Views, being an exclusive to Apple Music for the first 2 weeks of its release back in April. He's the most streamed artist ever. And One Dance is the most streamed song to grace the service. He's been unstoppable this year, a true global superstar, said Stefan Blom, Spotify's chief content and chief strategy officer.
What an awful name for anybody who's actually involved in a creative industry.
Stefan Blom?
No, I was more talking his job title.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, chief content, chief strategy officer. Yeah, it's one of those makeshift titles that will change numerous times throughout his career, I'm sure. He says, with the top album and the top song, as well as a successful Summer 16 tour, Drake continues to engage his fans in a way that only Drake can. But he doesn't add
by pouring
the fuck out of them. No surprise he's dominating the music industry, and it is disappointing that he is dominating the industry, I would say, because I just don't get it, guys.
Yeah, now hold on. If Views is the most streamed album, you have to like look at the data and go, did they listen to it the whole way through when they were streaming it, or was it a one click thing? Because that is a long, boring record.
It's terrible, and I don't even want to get to the bottom of this, but we will get into the most streamed artists 2016. Rather than doing a countdown, we'll just list it off. Okay, Drake's number one, Justin Bieber, Rihanna, 21 Pilots, and Kanye West are your top five.
Yeah, Kanye.
Most streamed female, Rihanna, Ariana Grande, Sia, Adele, and Fifth Harmony. Most streamed new artist, Zayn of One Direction fame, is top of that list. And as you say, the most streamed albums, The Weeknd is in there at number five with Beauty Behind the Madness, and we will be talking about Starboy in depth as our featured review this week. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I kind of want to see, I want to test your guys' knowledge, if you don't mind, because they did a thing where they broke it down with a top artist by genre.
Okay.
So I am going to fire you some genres that have been released as the number one hitters. I deliberately didn't include this in the notes. They're looking at me with scared faces right now.
Right, yeah.
It's an impromptu game. It's an impromptu quiz.
Love a pop
Alan,
quiz.
Alan, give us an impromptu sting.
It's literally a pop quiz. Or is it? Maybe it's a ska quiz.
It's Craig versus Cullum. Okay, top artist by genre in Spotify streams. Classic rock.
I'm going to go with Queen.
Cullum?
The year that's in it, perhaps Guns N' Roses.
The answer is The Beatles.
Oh, of course.
Classic okay. rock, though.
Four
really?
Lovable lads from Liverpool.
Classical music in general, guys.
Classical music.
Beethoven.
Yeah. Nope.
Mozart.
Yes. Shit. That's one for Cullum.
Fuck.
Country and Western. New country and Western.
Oh, the Cullum's got this sewn up.
You know what? This is a difficult one to judge. I'm going to go for Eric Church.
Craig?
Unless Billy Ray Cyrus has launched a comeback in the last year, I don't know any new country artists.
The answer is someone I think that you've interviewed, Cullum. Luke Bryan.
Oh, yeah, Luke Bryan. Oh.
So you're still in one. Old Country.
Old
Willie
country.
Nelson.
Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash, that's two for Cullum. Come on, Craig, pick this up, man.
I would argue that Johnny Cash was more rock and roll, but whatever.
EDM, electronic dance
Skrillex.
Music. No.
Deadmau5.
The Chainsmokers.
What?
Emo? Now, keep in mind, not all of these are, you know, brand new artists and brand new...
My Chemical Romance.
I said it first.
You're both wrong, but because you said it together in such wonderful, you know, simpatico nature, I'll give you guys another guess.
I can't even think of other emo bands. Fall Out Boy aren't emo. But then it could be such a broad definition.
Well, they would qualify because...
I'm going to go Fall Out Boy.
It's Panic at the Disco.
Of course.
Right. Hip-hop.
Drake?
Yes.
He said that first.
3-1. No, you both got it. 3-1. Jazz?
Kenny G.
Jazz.
Miles Davis.
No, it's going to be somebody kind of new and crap, isn't it? Jamie Cullum.
Female artist, not new or crap.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Diane Warwick or someone?
Nope.
I don't know.
If you went to see Inland Empire last week, this would have played over the end credits.
I didn't go and
this
see it.
This is the worst game ever.
An earache.
Nina Simone is the answer.
Oh, she's not really jazzy. I mean, she did some jazz songs.
Latin.
Enrique.
It is Enrique.
Finally pulled one back.
3-2. This game is okay. Heating up. Metal.
I imagine this
Metallica.
Is
Metallica. Yes. Yes. New Age.
What
is New Age?
Enya.
Yes, it is.
Steals it.
4-3, Craig. This
like
is amazing.
1999 all over again. At the debt.
Pop.
Taylor Swift still? Although
Ariana Grande.
It's Drake, which I don't agree with.
Oh, okay.
Oh, then Justin Bieber probably if he was second.
Why can
it should have
multiple
been.
Multiple categories.
Yeah. R&B?
Drake?
Nope.
Beyonce?
Rihanna. Reggae?
Bob Marley.
Yes, it is. I guess you both get a point there, so that's 5-4. Craig, we're coming to the end now.
How many of these are there?
Three more to go.
What?
Three more to go.
This feels exactly like when you're watching the Grammys and they're like, and the best spoken word album by a duo.
And the best Christian rock unboxing record was... Okay, reggaeton is the next genre.
Sean Paul?
It's Enrique Iglesias.
Right. Okay, I'm starting to question
two
this.
To go. Rock.
Can't think
they
of
had
one.
A terrible album out this year. Terrible album out this year. We reviewed it on the show.
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes, it is. Oh my God.
They're
it's
not rock.
We're out
they
of
should
tie.
Have been in reggaeton.
We are at a tie at 5-all as we get into the final one.
Oh, shit.
So I want you guys to really think about this because right. This is bragging rights.
We need
rights.
Buzzers for it, yeah.
Soul.
Marvin Gaye.
No.
Amy Winehouse.
You wait. He has to get a guess now.
God. He has to get a guess. So he got a point, even though he said one of the answers after me. But whatever.
Jesus Christ!
If we're playing that,
Craig's getting quite worked up about this, isn't he?
He is. He's bringing this game into disrepute.
Good soul. artist who could be on top of the list, I am going to say Luther Vandross.
And the answer is Michael Jackson. And that brings us about the end of the strange game that we just played there with 5-all. You can't separate them.
There were no winners.
I think the winner is obviously me as host of the podcast.
Certainly not
the winner
the
is music.
Yeah, I'm sure whatever sting Alan has bedded this down made that go a lot smoother. I thought it would have been really good in my head. I did my best here, guys.
I liked it.
Nonetheless.
It got a bit exciting now when I had my comeback.
You had a great comeback. That was really good. It was a real European night out in football in the 90s or something.
As every episode of No One Corners.
They often are. But yeah, Spotify. I don't know. I mean, like, it's. I don't know how I feel about this because it's one of those evolving platforms. And the fact is, The Weeknd, who we mentioned there, who we'll be talking about later on, enjoyed the most Spotify plays in one day ever when Starboy came out on Friday. So ultimately, it kind of changes like the wind, really, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. One guy who's decided that he's definitely not going to be getting on board is Garth Brooks, the highest selling solo performer in US history. And maybe it's for that reason, but he certainly isn't going to be embracing the digital age anytime soon. He's said that, you know, from day one, and he will still stand by the idea that radio is number one and it is always going to be where it's at.
Yeah, he said, I've said since day one and I'll stand by it forever. Radio is the window between the artist and the people who allow that artist to be an artist. I don't think you do it without radio. They can laud streaming all they want, but still the discovery process is going to be terrestrial radio. It just is. Which seems very similar to Prince's kind of the internet is dead comment and just... being a ridiculous statement.
Well, the thing is, coming from Garth Brooks, there are a couple of ways in which, both specific to him and generally, it kind of makes sense. I mean, first of all, you know, it's Garth Brooks and most of his popularity is going to be in the United States. It's a huge country. If you do get on radio there, it has a massive boost. And frankly, you don't need to go international as you would online. Secondly, countries are kind of a traditional market, and I know this because I looked at, you know, we mentioned Luke Bryan there a minute ago, the sort of plays that he's getting on Spotify, like they're roughly equivalent to what Codeline are getting, despite the fact that this guy is a stadium draw in the States, because Spotify just isn't a thing for country fans. Plus as well, like, it's Garth Brooks, it's not like he was going to be like, do you know how I get up with my fans? Snapchat.
Yeah, they've no Wi-Fi in like pickup trucks.
Yeah, precisely.
That's profiling, Craig, and I won't have it on my show.
I'm sorry, Garth.
So, Garth Brooks, yeah, I mean, his new album's called The Gunslinger, perhaps appropriately for a man who seems making a defiant last stand in a world that does no longer understand him. But just read the interview. It's actually a pretty good interview. I thought it was interesting.
He's a very interesting guy.
This is the thing. I feel like it's too easy to just go, oh, Garth Brooks, whatever. But like, I'm no fan, but... Actually, we should say that Josh Hughes, who's appeared on the show and, of course, is our unofficial mascot, is a huge Garth Brooks fan. Loves the man's work.
I'm down with Garth Brooks, to be fair. Wasn't overly pleased with the time that he ruined my summer by having to report
constantly,
daily
yeah.
on those concerts. But
the dance is a tune.
Yeah, but he's a really interesting guy. The thing is, like, when Garth Brooks is saying, like, you know, that this is how you connect with the fans and blah, 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 like, this isn't just some sort of stupid lip service artists being artists speak. Like, he has a marketing degree from Oklahoma State. He's actually put thought into all of this stuff. His career has been incredibly managed from long before there was digital platforms around. And like, I've no doubt that, like, even though he's sort of dismissing Spotify here, he's probably crunching the numbers to see when it will make
so
sense.
So you don't think
it's
just old man Chet's a cloud?
No, I don't think so.
Digital cloud.
Well, what a band they weren't. Digital Cloud. Can you imagine going to see a band called Digital Cloud? Yeah. That'd be
upstairs in Whelan's for Hot Press 4 years ago.
Horrific. Like 17 cents.
The other thing, of course,
17
is that
cents, what a band they were.
I think you get sort of the reverse happening at times where you have young people in particular, but sort of people who are fans of digital streaming, stuff like that, saying, you know, oh God, radio, what an old and out-of-date concept that is. I'd rather listen to this playlist that someone has sat down and curated, because that's their job, which is basically what a radio DJ does, except without the talking in
the middle. Well, I mean, radio, at least community managers are keeping radio live by putting up fucking nonsensical photographs of dogs and people lying in bed on a Monday and going, oh, we don't know how it feels, don't we, on their fucking social media platforms. Thanks for ruining communication for the rest of us, you Anyway.
Why are community radio managers getting this particular...
Not community radio, community management. Community management is when you look after your social media feeds.
Okay, right, yeah.
It's one of those... It's like that chief content and strategy officer.
I thought it was like Kay Burley and the sad dog in Paris last year.
God, Kay Burley.
Sadness so sad. In his eyes.
Before we get completely derailed any further... I would like to posit a quote here from Garth in this interview. I said it was a good read. More of a general statement. He says, your job as an artist is to make sure that vein of why people even listen to you in the first place isn't every record that you make. An album has to be who you are at the time you're making it. What kills me is we're kind of known as the traditional country artist now because when we started out, they wanted to hang us. But now, because they didn't think we were anything near traditional country music. So as a country music fan, Cullum, is he talking any sense there? And also, isn't it funny that someone says that who once released an album about, you know, the life of Chris Gaines when he did the Trent Reznor emo thing.
Yeah.
And that was a really good song, by the way.
Was it? Okay.
Do you not know
Lost in You.
Let's have a listen. Heaven knows I'm head over heels and it shows. I played every field, I suppose. But there's something about you when you're around. Great song, I think we can all agree.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a tune. No, he's absolutely...
I'm on the fence.
Oh, both sides of the fence.
There's
a Garth Brooks pun for all you country fans out there.
I think Cullum wins the previous quiz by default now.
No! Don't take that away from me.
It's a genre of music that has changed a lot, to be fair. You go down to that country to country festival in The Point, and I mean, you know, there's rock star production values. There's guys who have more in common with professional wrestlers than what you'd traditionally expect as the sort of Stetson wearing country artists. It's probably not before time as well, because
Florida Georgia Line, is that what they're called?
Yeah, Florida Georgia Line. They're like the Ant and Dec of country music.
They're
basically
shocking.
and you know, but like it was probably a slightly backwards genre, it's fair to say, in terms of female artists, in terms of obviously any sort of variety in what they were actually covering. And now, granted, it is very is still very limited in terms of like guns, trucks and beer.
Yeah.
All three, if you can combine them in a song like Beer in the Headlights, which is pretty wonderful. But
well, but yeah. Before we move on, I should...
Was that segment Cullum on Country, was it? Is that a thing now?
It could be.
When Kanye has had a few quiet weeks, we need to find something.
Just have some steel guitar and you're going, Cullum on Country.
Do not adjust your phone, I guess you're probably listening to us on. I should note at this stage, by the listeners, I apologise if I sound a bit under the weather. I am, in fact, under the weather. I'm fighting a cold and doing my best, trying to get through it, self-medicating. And I sounded a lot worse 2 days ago. But, you know, I don't know. It was kind of cool as well. It was kind of husky.
Like you say, give the Doyle a few hours and when we get out of here, your self-medicating will be a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about Kate Bush last week for the first time on the show.
And it was a big event.
We're going to talk about her again.
Everyone was excited she was back, in a sense. I mean, we got the live album of her London shows from a couple of years ago, Before the Dawn. Extremely well received. And she had some things to say about those shows and, you know, stepping back into the spotlight. She also talked about her friendship with Prince. But in another interview with Canadian current affairs magazine Maclean's, she's been getting political, as you would in a current affairs magazine, and she's described Theresa May, Prime Minister of the UK, as wonderful, which has just sent everyone that really loves Kate Bush, mainly lefties, into an absolute tizzy. She was asked basically whether there was a fear after Clinton's, you know, recent defeat and the whole Brexit thing. And Bush replied, "We have a female prime minister here in the UK. I actually really like her and think she's wonderful. I think it's the best thing that's happened to us in a long time. She's a very intelligent woman, but I don't see much to fear. I will say it is great to have a woman in charge of the country. She's very sensible, and I think that's a good thing at this point in time." So there's been a lot of kind of ire and condemnation online. It seems like something that might have been taken out of context. And in previous interviews, she doesn't seem like someone who even bothers too much with the political. So I think she's literally just saying, it's nice that there's a strong woman there, as opposed to, I'm all for a Brexit.
Yeah, she sounds like she's talking about Theresa May personally here.
Yeah.
She also, I mean, you know, people have kind of been talking about, like, you know, outing herself as a Tory. And it's like, all right, like, she's not looking to chair the 22 or anything. Like, you know, she just seems to
And in
to
fairness,
like
she was
Theresa
massive in
there.
The 80s. So
this is very true. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, yeah, it's not like she's peddling Trumpian policies here or anything. So I think some of the reaction has probably been a little bit overblown.
Yeah, yeah, completely. I mean, it's also one of these things as well where, like, how often do you see things reported with headlines with quotes in them where ultimately somebody asked them a question specifically relating to an issue in the middle of an interview and you gave your answer at that time? I don't think she's looking to take down society or anything, but who knows? Harbingers come in different forms, guys.
It's true. It's interesting as well that fans put so much stock in, you know, what artists think politically in those terms. I mean, it seems like people were genuinely devastated that she would even think of, like, you know, giving a compliment to Theresa May. It's just, you know, people saying, oh, well, I can't listen to her music now. It's baffling, really, but yeah.
I did like one thing I saw online, though, where somebody said, oh, good, we can all stop pretending that we like Kate Bush now.
rubbish.
Because there's a bit of that, though, let's be honest. You know, she's a heritage artist for a lot of people who probably don't even fucking listen to her.
She's amazing. Amazing.
Well, one band who are a heritage artist in their own country, and a band that I caught live this year, guys. I
went to. Must have been a highlight of the year, was it?
What was the hashtag?
The hashtag was Dave Does Nickelback.
And who were the band?
Nickelback. it didn't make my gigs of the year, though. I did my gigs of the year today. And it did. Macklemore made it, though. But Nickelback,
of course,
didn't.
Yeah. I mean, Macklemore was when you
folks
went properly viral. Go to
joe.ie and read when I went to see Nickelback. That was really fun. Everyone enjoyed it. So, do you want to attempt to drink and drive in Canada? That's a question that we would ask Josh if we were asking him a horrible question. Obviously, you should never drink and drive anywhere. But if you do that in Kensington in Canada, the police force of this small town on Prince Edward Island will have a unique punishment for you, along with, you know, your jail term and suspension of your license, of course. They will personally escort you to their prison, I guess, to their holding cell for the evening.
And jail.
They will play. Apparently, it doesn't specify, but I presume they'll be spinning around the blocks here, because they're going to play the at least some of, if not the entirety, of Nickelback album Silver Side Up. And they have made this known. It has, you know, lit up the internet. Everyone's very happy about it. It's kind of, you know, Nickelback haven't weighed in themselves yet. But what do we think? This is like, we've heard stories before about, like, the likes of death metal and even in some cases Westlife apparently being used as torture music in places like Guantanamo Bay. Mm-hmm. This seems to be the next level of that kind of thing.
I feel like people that would be drink driving would probably enjoy Nickelback as they're hammered there.
100%. If someone's in the back of a car and they're fucking locked and they're hearing, like, you know, hey, you remind me, you're going to be like, turn that up.
Yeah. It's a sing-along party at that point, isn't it?
Like, flash those lights. Let's get this going. I don't think this is necessarily an effective deterrent.
No, it's just them trying to be all banterific.
Because
isn't
I
it?
Should note that when I went to that Nickelback gig, as a social experiment, by the way, dear listeners, I got fucking blitzed. And I had a really good time. So that's the key to enjoying Nickelback.
You'll see that
next week he'll be drinking and
work.
Driving as a social experiment for the podcast.
I won't be doing that. I don't condone that. And I also don't drive a car, so don't worry about anybody. But no, seriously, if anyone's listening to us while drinking and driving, please stop.
Anyway, it's not something we have to worry about. But yeah, sorry, Colm.
No, I was going to say as well, though, like, the other thing is people keep picking on Nickelback with these sorts of ideas and these sorts of stories, and they really do just take it in their stride. Like, they're in on the joke.
100%, yeah.
So, you know, it's almost like if you really don't like Nickelback, a bit like a controversial politician, like, don't give them the oxygen of publicity. Just let it alone.
Like, Royal Blood recently on Twitter kind of, like, had a go with them, and Nickelback just totally fucking put them in their place, and it was kind of like, well, lads, that kind of got you, didn't it? Yeah. And even when I was doing the hashtag Dave Does Nickelback, I was like, I hope they don't re-notice this, because, you know, it's all in good fun.
Yeah, I mean, we said kind of a long time ago on this podcast that the joke was over, and I think it's really jumped the shark when the police are now kind of getting in on the act.
Sting? Okay. That's who they should be playing. The police should be playing the police when they bring you to the jail. No,
now that might upset me. There, although Walking on the Moon's pretty good.
They have their odd moments.
Yeah, some good
maybe
songs.
Bad cover versions, like when Machine Head did Message in a Bottle.
Again, 8 points deep. I think I'm down. Like,
have you heard Machine Head's version of Message in a Bottle?
No,
you're about to.
Okay, there's no amount of drink in the world that would really make that
I liked
tolerable
it.
On the way home.
Well, let's have a listen to something else, shall we, Cullum?
Let's.
That was going to be my cue for Cullum to lead us into the songs of the week, but he didn't do it, so I'll do it. It's our last songs of the week of the year, and I'll explain why that is right after we hear the first track this week. And let's go with somebody who came over to Dublin quite recently. Let's go with Paul Simon and a rework of his song. It's called Stranger.
Milwaukee man led a fairly decent life, made a fairly decent living, had a fairly decent wife. She killed him, a sushi knife. Now they're shopping for a fairly decent afterlife. The werewolf has come. Most old bits are mixed reviews. Life is a lottery, a lot of people lose.
So yeah, Paul Simon tapped members of Chance the Rapper's frequent collaborators, The Social Experiment, to rework two tracks from his latest record into a wholly unique new song. What do we think of it, guys?
I quite like it. I also quite like what he was saying that kind of was attached to the release, where he kind of really seemed to understand, I guess, his place in the modern music world, that, you know, as something of a heritage act, he does have to create a brand new level of interest in what he's doing. He does have to change things up every now and then. And I mean, you know, is this an absolute home run? Probably not. But it is actually going to make me go back and listen to an album that I kind of just gave a cursory spin to a few months ago.
Yeah, that was my exact thinking. It kind of just puts it in a whole new context. And it works really well, I think, at least for, I mean, the opening is very striking. And I think his words, he's just such a master with wordplay, that he would kind of slot in most backings, I think. Like, you know what I mean? You can use him. He's quite malleable. He'll always give you a good line. There's a great, there's a couple of great lines in this. Most of bits are mixed reviews. There's, you know, he's just that kind of trademark wit and stuff. And I haven't been keeping up to speed with his stuff. By all accounts, the new album is maybe his best kind of post-Graceland effort. So I'm definitely going back to that. And yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, he makes the point, he says he's been familiar to the public for 50 years, and people are like, you know, there's a lot of preconceptions about him. They're like, is it going to be Graceland? Is it going to be me and Julia down by the schoolyard, Simon and Garfunkel? He says, to get people to listen to you with open ears, you have to really make something that is interesting, because you're prepared for it not to be interesting, which is a really healthy attitude to have, I think, at this stage of the game. He played the Three Arena recently. Regular guest on the show, Andrea Cleary, was there and said it was an unbelievable evening of music.
I've been lucky enough to catch him a few times, and yeah, he's incredible live.
But you did have to educate your other half recently.
Yeah, the Viking wasn't overly familiar, it seems. I mentioned that Paul Simon was playing in town, and she was like, who? And I was like, you know, Simon Garfunkel, Bridge Over Troubled Water. And she's like, oh, okay, yeah, no, yeah, I get it. Oh, they're playing. And I was like, well, no, not Garfunkel anymore. And she said, oh, yeah, is that because he got eaten by a tiger? At which point I realised that she was thinking of Siegfried and Roy.
How did she make that connection?
I've no idea. No idea.
Eaten by a tiger.
Yeah. He wasn't even eaten by a tiger. I mean, he was bitten, but
he survived.
This is Roy.
Yeah.
Garfunkel had Roy no survived. Interaction with tigers whatsoever.
When you initially told me this, thinking was, did Roy die?
Yeah.
And look, he's fine.
I thought he had his face torn off.
No, he's okay.
He's grand.
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't a great day.
Tigers are wonderful, majestic creatures, and we should respect them more, I think. Let's have a song. It's a cover version of a song from many years ago by two gentlemen that we love to love on this podcast. This is Hamilton and Rostam with Mr. Tambourine Man. So before we get to the Bob Dylan cover that we're going to talk about, the lads took issue there off mic with me talking about tigers. I happen to love tigers, guys. Nothing wrong with that.
I love tigers as well. I mean, I don't think I was ever lacking in respect for them, though.
No. I have a ton of respect. Fear. Fear, if anything.
If anything.
I've got a tiger tattooed on my arm. See? Mm-hmm. In a suit. Yeah.
Yeah, although I've been watching Planet Earth 2, and there's just this incredible tug of war between, like, you're rooting for the tiger to catch someone, but you're kind of rooting for the prey to get away as well.
Very mixed emotions.
It's difficult.
Dave, did a tiger have to get in that suit and pose for that tattoo to become a reality? Because, you know, kind of slagging off Siegfried and Roy, you could be blamed for the same thing.
No, it's an abstract thing that I dreamt about once.
Oh, okay.
And then a friend of mine did a painting of it, and I liked the painting so much that I got it tattooed.
Beautiful.
That's a tattoo update with Dave Hanrady.
Which doesn't work very well on podcast, but Dave will just post a photo of his tattoo on his Twitter next week.
I will. Yeah. So at Hanrady Dave. At Hanrady Dave on Twitter, I will do that for everyone to enjoy. So, do we enjoy this, though? Hamilton and Rostam, we previously reviewed their record, and we're big fans. Hamilton Lighthizer is coming to the Workman's Club in Dublin in March, I believe, and I cannot wait. Sadly, Rostam won't be there with him, but they have given us another gift of this cover, and I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pleasant, it's good, it's enjoyable. It has a weird kind of Christmassy vibe for me, just because we're now in December. It's a very New York song. They're doing that thing. Yeah, it's very cold. And yeah, I liked it, but you know, it's interesting with his voice and the kind of the talent he has, when he's doing kind of like, you know, kaleidoscopic psych kind of folky song, it's kind of almost drone like. There's not a huge amount for him to do, so he's not really, you know, it's not really him getting to kind of show off all his talents.
As cover versions go, it was almost a little bit too pure. You would have liked to see it just let off the reins ever so slightly.
Yeah, they kind of did a Velvet Underground thing with it, which was cool. Yeah,
but it's perfectly pleasant. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I don't think it needs to be anything more than it is. It sounded exactly like what I thought it would, and I enjoyed it exactly as much as I thought I would enjoy it, and the type of thing that you would totally throw on, you know, as you're having a glass of whiskey in front of the fire thinking about tigers
in a dressing gown.
Let's go for something completely different. Burial, who we've yet to feature on the show as well, he's back with two tracks. They sound very much like Burial songs. Let's have a snippet of Night Market.
The Frontier.
There's Night Market along with Young Death, and I really like Night Market. It takes 5 minutes to really get going, as you might expect, but once it does, I want to see the science fiction film that he's apparently written the lead motif for with this, because it just, it really conjures up all those images for me, and I think it would work great in that respect.
Yeah, it could work well in the kind of X-rated Stranger Things theater.
But enough about your what you want the season two of Stranger Things to go X-rated, okay.
But yeah, I, as you said before we kind of led into the track, it's very much Burial, which is interesting because this isn't quite an EP, it's two tracks, it's about 13 minutes, but he's been doing this basically for the last, what, 5 years? 5 years plus, where he doesn't really go the album route anymore. He takes his time, but he releases kind of EPs and he goes in different directions, and it's more experimental kind of freeform thing for him to just work in that way. With this, he's kind of just doing the Burial thing. I mean, it's not quite parody, but it's all the kind of touchstones are there, the atmospheric thing. It's almost like field record or like street recordings. I mean, there's no real beats to these things. You're just getting a kind of Burial feel, and that's enjoyable, but I don't know if he's really offering anything new.
Yeah, as you say, Night Market takes a while, and it was really only towards the second half of that track that I was in any way really taken by or interested in either of these releases. I mean, you know, there's a lot to be said for a guy who knows how to sort of manipulate soundscapes like that, but maybe it just needs a little more by way of sort of melodic purpose in order to actually make it worthwhile.
Yeah, I fully agree. I mean, it's lacking in structure, arguably lacking in coherence, but it definitely has the ambient atmosphere that you would want it to have, and it definitely justifies the build up. I think, I mean, I was kind of, you know, tapping my watch listening to it for the first time, but it totally paid off in the way I wanted it to. But at the same time, with Burial, I can take him or leave him. I mean, I admire it, but I find it very difficult to just lose myself in it. I think you really got to be in the certain kind of mood for it. Yeah. And but yeah, I mean, like, again, the sci-fi thing, there is a track out this week which is tacked onto a sci-fi film. It's by a band that I just don't quite really get the appeal of, but we'll give it a go. This is Imagine Dragons. So that's Levitate. It comes from a science fiction movie coming out with Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence called Passengers. It looks really bad. Mm-hmm. It looks really homogenized and generic and paint by numbers. I really don't get much from it. I don't have any intention of seeing it. And in that regard, this track works just fine.
Yeah,
it really does. It's so innately the soundtrack to a movie, isn't it? And, you know, writing songs for movies are tying them in. It's difficult. I'd love to know the creative process for this, because either way, it doesn't sound like they're exactly committed to their ideas on this song.
No.
And it sounds like they could very easily have just been given instructions, given clips from the movie.
Well, this is the thing.
Told,
I mean,
right around this.
If I was going to house a genre for this kind of a song, I would say client-based.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the plot of this film is that they're going to a different, like a distant kind of planet, but they wake up 90 years early or something, and there's a line in it that's like, I know we're so far from where we need to be, and then they're talking about, like, you know, shooting stars and stuff like that. It's really just like, what's the film about? All right, yeah, I would just do it, and then I kind of love it.
You feel like it was probably written in tandem with their community manager and social outreach coordinator. Yeah.
100%, absolutely. And I'm sure there were lots of notes, and there was lots of feedback, and there was lots of, can we say this instead? And
amends.
Amends, yeah, lots of amends. And I mean, in fairness, that's fine. That is quite, it almost is a genre of its own. And I'm reminded of when Anthony Gonzalez of M83 worked on Oblivion.
His IKEA case.
He worked on...
So happy with it, he made his album cover.
This is really good, I'm going to totally do this. He worked on the film Oblivion, Tom Cruise sci-fi film Oblivion, and the soundtrack that he created is very good, and it has a couple of standout moments. Starwaves and the title track in particular with Suzanne Sundfor is excellent, but he didn't like the experience at all, and he found it very stifling. He seemed to be quite shocked by this, that working on a Hollywood production with Tom Cruise was going to lead to a lot of studio interference. Oh, fucking course it will, Anthony. And yeah, he said it really left a sour taste in his mouth. One of the reasons why he went and made the terrible record that he made this year was because he wanted to have fun again. But, you know, I think if you're going to take the paycheck for this kind of a movie, then absolutely what you release musically alongside it is going to be fairly non-committal.
Sterile is one of the words,
yeah,
that came
to mind.
Sterile is
perfect.
But, you know, Imagine Dragons seemed like the perfect band to do that.
Definitely.
I mean, yeah. You know, this the kind of hook to this is just like some watered-down Alt-J or something. And that's all you can say about that.
One band that will not have to deal with such requests, you feel, in the next little while, and certainly that won't be expected to release something sterile anytime soon. Run the Jewels are back. They've brought news, which we'll have in a second, but also a track. It's called Legend Has It. Sounds like this. Now I smoke pounds of the kush. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Two runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight. Of uppers and downers get done. I'm in a rush to be numb. Dropping 1,000 ain't much. Cup on the clouds on a missile to turn us all. So, yeah, new track. And like I say, news too. Finally, we have confirmation the album is on the way.
Yay! Woo. January the 13th. Run the Jewels 3 or
good
TJ
start
3.
To the year.
Giving away for free, apparently.
Danny Brown's going to be on it, which I'm very excited about.
You got Danny Brown. I believe there's a member of TV on the Radio on there. Boots, of course, was previously confirmed. And so far, so good, I think.
Sure. And indeed, same goes for what we've heard of it so far. We got a track, of course, a month or two ago. This is the second taste. And yeah, I mean, we talked at that point that it was pretty much going to be a sequel record to what we've heard before.
Yeah.
We said at the time, we're fine with that. This probably doesn't do anything to change that.
No, it's very much a continuation. And they've talked about this, you know, being another part in what will now be a trilogy, I'm guessing. They're saying this time around, you are the jewel. So it's going to be very affirming and kind of like, it feels like a kind of, you know, celebration almost. And yeah, they're very confident on this, as they should be. The production's tight as feck, as per usual. It's great.
Yeah. The artwork is stunning as well.
It is. Like,
they've pretty much already sewn up best album artwork for 2017. And yeah, I mean, I think we'll Run the Jewels, there's only so much you can really say, and I don't mean that in some kind of weird, you know, reductive way, but ultimately they do what they do. They have their signature style down so well at this point that, you know, ultimately it's just like diving into them and their stream of consciousness at the time. I love everything that they do. They just have such incredible language and cadence, and I'm such a fan. I can't wait for this record. I was giving out today about records that were like more than 10 tracks long. This one is 14 tracks long. And in this situation, I'm kind of like, yeah, you know, okay, fair enough.
Now, it should be said that we pretty much ended the show last week by saying something similar.
Yeah.
Saying that The Weeknd's album at 18 tracks was not necessarily going to put us off. It certainly didn't stop us from giving it a fair few spins this week.
Mm.
this is what it sounds like. And when we come back, we're going to have a verdict that, yeah, could get interesting. Switch on my core if I kill any pain. Look what you got. I'm a motherfucking star boy. That is the lead single and the title track of The Weeknd's Starboy, released about 10 days ago at this point. We have been listening to it a lot since its release. And yeah, we said at 18 tracks, we hoped it wasn't going to be a slog. Well, how did that go for you?
Well, the only thing that's kind of uncompromising about it is its length. Because it's him very much just with one foot in the kind of pop star role, pop star world, and then still doing bits of that kind of, you know, sound that he more or less, you know, created and perfected himself before we even kind of knew who he was, which is, to my mind, the most interesting stuff. But this is just so flabby, and there's kind of so many generic pop tracks, light R&B tracks that just sound like placeholders for something better, and he just kind of decided to stick it all out. And certainly by, you know, midway through the second half, you're kind of just saying, do we need another song that sounds like this?
Repetition is arguably the biggest problem that this record has, and it has several. And I think Cullum is right to kind of, you know, flag me there when I'm saying, hey, you know, 14 tracks would be grand, because to be fair, at 18 tracks, this is bloated. And it was like Beauty Behind the Madness was bloated with, I think it was 14 tracks there when it came out last year. The main issue, as I say there, is that this is nothing that we don't already know, and we're being told it again, and then we're being told it again, and then he's telling us again. And if you're not familiar with The Weeknd, and if you only know like the hits or whatever that he's had in the last kind of year or so, essentially, when he came out of nowhere, there was mystery as to who or what he was, with a trilogy of mixtapes later released as Trilogy, and eventually he kind of, you know, came out of the shadows, revealed who he was. People thought it was a collective, it's just one guy. Now, granted, he's worked with a lot of different people. But ultimately, there was a lot of kind of darkness there. There's a lot of kind of moodiness, and you were like, okay, well, what's this guy really about? He decided to tip that on its head in the last couple of years by announcing that he wants to be the biggest pop star in the world, and that's where the likes of Can't Feel My Face and working with the likes of Max Martin came from. He managed to balance it quite well, I thought, on that record, which followed up Kissland, which I think is quite an underrated effort, actually. I think it's a really good record. And with this, it's doubling down. I mean, the fact that we even have it a year after the previous one, you're like, well, this guy's really going for it. Like, you know, you're bringing in Daft Punk, you're working with Max Martin again, you're working with, you know, you've got people like Sam Smith on there, Lana Del Rey's back once more, Kendrick Lamar has a verse, Future's on there twice for some inexplicable reason. It's a glitzy, gilded affair. And The Weeknd's kind of stock and trade is that he likes to have a lot of sex, he likes to do a lot of drugs, he likes to get completely fucked up.
But enough about me.
And he then likes to complain about it. And essentially, that can work, and it has worked on tracks like Wicked Games, on even like Can't Feel My Face, you know, The Hills, which balance it so well, Tears in the Rain, Wanderlust. He's got an incredible cluster of great songs that deal with this subject matter. But it does become a bit one-dimensional, even if it is exaggerated or not, we don't quite know. I'd imagine he is having quite a good time. But at the same time, when you're just getting in my face now and telling me that this is a problem for you, and then telling me again two tracks later, and then telling me again two tracks later, and then telling me again two tracks later, it's a bit much. And I'm a fan, but it's a bit much.
It is. And frankly, yeah, moderation is key in so much of this record. And, you know, I was reminded of, as cliched as it sounds, that old Miles Davis line, you know, it's not just the notes you play, it's the notes you don't. And really the secret to pop, so much of it, is your economy. And that, you know, there's not a pick of fat on the best pop songs. That's what makes them great pop songs. And then you get a record like this, which, you know, it's flabby, it's bloated, are the words that you guys used. Yet you can hear what he's trying to do at times, I feel. He's very much obsessed with a sort of a 1980s pop sound, and there's very definitely kind of like really strong Michael Jackson hints poking through here.
It's more than hints.
Well, rather. Yeah, it's a lot more than hints. In some cases, it's actual just rehashes of songs. But there's another 1980s name that jumps out to me, and it's kind of like that Stock, Aitken and Waterman approach of like, let's get three hit singles, four hit singles, and then just shove any old shite that you can turn out in the studio so that we can make it into a full album. It really is the sort of here's a killer, but then here's a lot of filler. And on this album, it's a lot. There's an argument to be made that tracks 1 and track 18 are the standout songs on the record. The two with Daft Punk.
Called it.
And
called
then in between.
You're wrong, though. You're totally wrong. But
well, I mean, like,
there's another handful of songs that are up
so
there.
I mean, obviously, we've all heard Starboy at this stage. If you haven't been streaming I Feel It Coming, then you're going to be hearing it very soon because it's got hit written all over it. Let's get into the
Sure, we'll have
of
a quick listen
then.
To I Feel It Coming just real quick just to refresh it as that kind of dichotomy. Mm-hmm. So this is I Feel It Coming. Lovely stuff. I like the song, but it is Daft Punk by numbers.
No, well, you're just saying that because they have the robot voices towards the end, which they should stop doing at this stage. But I know what you're saying. It's also a very nice closer.
It is an excellent closer. It totally works
as a closer. It actually kind of makes you feel better about what you've just gone through. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, like, okay, look. For me, the first four tracks in this record is the strongest run.
Yeah. Well,
I think it would make an amazing EP. The title track, which I've been pushing with you guys for the last couple of months, I think is one of the best songs of the year. I think it's fantastic. Party Monster, I think, is excellent. I think it has that incredibly good horror movie vibe that The Hills had. I think he does it very, very well. I think even, like, you know, like lines like, I'm like, got up, thanked the Lord for the day, woke up by a girl, I don't even know her name. I like the duality there. And that's a really good dark
Do you like the cocaine sniffs that he's just stuck on it? Because, you know, that's a bad omen of where we're going with this record. When you're just having on the second track. Like.
Well, it leads well into False Alarm.
Goes dance punk.
False Alarm doesn't quite work. I think the verses are great. The chorus, I admire what he was going for. The marriage of styles doesn't gel. But I think it's something different, at least.
You see, this is the thing. For me, that's symptomatic of the whole album. And, you know, it's funny that you picked that line out from Party Monster. That sort of woke up by a girl, don't even know her name, becomes a hook in the song. And you don't realise how potent it is until about the last 20 seconds, at which point the rest of the song has sort of been stripped away. Because a lot of the verses of that song are lyrically cack.
Yeah, and that's true of a lot of this record. There's some clumsy stuff on
this. It's not only the fact that it's necessarily going to be lyrically weak, because then there's other areas where the lyrics are extremely strong, such as the track that I think you were just about to come on to, Reminder. And it has those great lines about winning a Teen Choice Award for Can't Feel My Face.
And he's resentful of it.
Well, and he's like...
And he didn't actually win it, apparently.
No, he didn't win the Teen Choice. He won a similar type of award.
Like
and then he says, you know, goddamn bitch, I'm not a Teen Choice.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, wondering about a girl like humming off a bag of blow. And it's a funny lyric. It's a good lyric.
Yeah.
But it's stuck in a song that has nothing that ostensibly sounds like any sort of real melodic hook.
Well, I think his flow is the melodic hook on this one, because I think he glides over this arrangement
wonderfully. Thing. Like,
but it's strange, because this song is an illustration of the dichotomy on this record that is ultimately quite problematic, in as much as he wants to be all things to all people, and you can't be that. And the problem is that he's, on one hand, saying, I'm really resentful of being in this category, but you released Can't Feel My Face, and it was the biggest song of last summer.
Yeah, so it's a real kind of weak attempt.
He's trying to still be the guy who was on tracks like Wicked Games in 28, and also be the guy who released In the Night and Can't Feel My Face. You can't be both of those people, and that's why Starboy doesn't work overall.
And do you know what? If he just followed his kind of his intuition I think he'd still be having the big hits. I mean, Starboy's, the title track's been really well received. Lyrically, that's great. It has that darkness. The Hills kind of almost threw back to earlier Weekend stuff. That was a big hit.
Excellent
he
song.
Doesn't need to be... Like, I know he's had a lot of success with Max Martin, but by the time you get onto Rockin', which just sounds like such a generic...
It's a Justin Timberlake cast-off. Yeah.
And every Max Martin tune on this, and they're mainly towards the back end, they're just so generic.
Rockin' is the kind of thing that you hear in changing rooms and Top Shop.
Yeah. Mm. It's beneath him.
True Colors is the worst song he has released in his entire
It's an
career.
R. Kelly jam.
It's an R. Kelly fucking seaside. It's terrible.
I mean, it's so bad. Yeah. It's
shocking. I can't get over it.
It's like one of those songs.
I hate it.
It's like, do you know what it's like? It's like, and I sent this to you the other day, it's the fat guy who sings Smash Mouth's Rockstar.
Let's not body shame.
Over every song he can find. And it's like, you know, these are lyrics from a completely different song and it's never going to fit. And that's what True Colors is. But yeah, for me, like I say, this is just a thought that reoccurs throughout this album, that there are just pieces that don't fit together. And it ends up bringing the sum of it down.
But the weird thing is, it starts off with such a rush, such a cocaine high, if you will. And then it goes into, like, you know, Rockin', which doesn't quite work. Secrets, which is really good. And
Secrets
nods,
is a great song,
it
yeah.
nods to the Romantics and their excellent song, Talking in Your Sleep.
Yeah, Tears.
But then,
well.
Once the True Colors thing comes in, it turns into, like, R&B by numbers. And I mean, even like Sidewalks, which has Kendrick Lamar and has that much hyped verse from him, which I think is good.
Yeah, it's
not peak Kendrick.
At least he mentions Starboy in it, so he can't be accused of it just being taken from that vault he has there. He just recorded stuff.
But once Kendrick goes away and you get the second half of the record, right, you then get a stack of songs in which, okay, there's like eight of them here. We could have had four.
Yeah.
Because...
Oh. Totally.
You know, 6 Feet Under with Future is boring. Love to Lay, I think, is really good, but it's just a Michael Jackson karaoke song.
Mm. Yeah, it is. It's karaoke. Karaoke's the word, I think.
Same with A Lonely Night and Attention, Ordinary Life. Like, all of these tracks, they just run into each other, and it just sounds so, like, I can't differentiate it. And when I Feel It Coming comes along, as Craig says, it is like getting a breath again, because you're cool. That's fun.
There is a sense of relief involved. There is.
Have you seen have you seen the short film that he put out to accompany this record?
No, I have not.
Cullum?
Yeah, I have.
12 minutes long. It's called Mania.
Yeah.
And it contains cuts from the record, and it picks up where the Starboy video ends, where he's driving away in the car. And it's exquisite to look at. The director of photography was a lady by the name of Natasha Breyer, who was the same director of photography on Nicholas Winding Refn's The Neon Demon this year, mm-hmm. which looked unbelievable. So naturally, it looks incredible. And it kind of sums it all up, really, in terms of, here's The Weeknd in his amazing car. He's got his big giant panther with him. He's in a club. He's in the bathroom and some guy is about to try and kill him, but that guy ends up getting horrifically murdered and Weekend's covered in blood. And now he's dancing with this dead-eyed model who was the panther, I guess. And it's all opulent and it's all excess. And he's there, you know, dancing away and having a great time and smiling at the camera as the credits roll. And it looks like something out of a Kubrick film. And you're like, you have it all. But it's all so empty.
And
yeah, like, is that the message is that it's empty, but it's also kind of just empty because he's not really saying anything.
No,
yeah,
there's no commentary here. Yeah. It's just, here I am, and I'm not sure if this works, but I'm telling you it works because I want everyone to believe that I am this persona and I want to be the biggest thing in the world. But
I'm also subversive, yeah.
Just yeah. doesn't really...
And it's funny that you talk about the Neon Demon right there, because a lot of people pointed to that as being an example how... he's sort of ridden that wave from Drive and been able to do some interesting things and weird things and, you know, has maybe like tried to find what works and what doesn't or whatever. Mm-hmm. On this record, there seems to be no concept of what works or what doesn't for The Weeknd. And it's such a yawning chasm that even though there are a handful of standout tracks here, the lows just dilute it to the point that it's really not a strong record anymore.
That's the problem. And The Neon Demon, by the way, I mean, has also been met with a lot of mixed reviews. I personally think it's great. I think it's the best film in 2016. But with this album, I had such high hopes and I tried for so long to kind of go with it and be like, I know what he's trying to do here, but it became, I think Yawning Chasm is the best way to put it. I reviewed it for Drain and Sound. I gave it 6 out of 10. But even now, 24 hours removed from me filing that review, I'd almost lower that. I'd almost go 5.5. And I can't believe I'm saying that about The fucking Weeknd.
Yeah, it'd probably be verging on a kind of 5.5 for me. I mean, it's really not that strong whatsoever. And as Cullum says, there's just so many tracks that you would want to skip that it kind of takes away from the jams that are here, and there is great stuff here, but it's just, yeah, overall.
Well, I imagine this is how it feels to kind of like stand in some murky river and pan for gold. That
you've never done that?
That you know there's going to be a gem or two along here somewhere. But frankly, is it worth the hassle? Is it worth the amount of shite that you're going to pick up along the way? And yeah, it's a very disappointing album. It's probably a 5 for me.
I think it is worth the struggle, I will say. And I will stick with my 6 because that's what I put out in print. So fair enough. But I think what works incredibly well. And I'm probably going to do a Craig on Kanye on this and make my own album edit, which will involve me trimming so much of the fat. But I still think that first 4-track run is excellent. I think Secrets is great. I think Sidewalks has its moments.
Yeah, it works.
I think Love to Lay is fun if you allow him the indulgence of doing the Michael Jackson thing. And I think I Feel It Coming makes for a strong closer. I think there was a better EP here than there was a record.
And yeah, we're only a year on from his last record.
And that's why it should have been an EP. Yeah. It should have been, here is a taste of what I'm up to. But as it stands, this is a misstep. It's a bit of a brick. Mm-hmm. But it won't harm him. I think he'll be fine.
No. The one thing that I would say, though, is that, you know, if, as you presume, he's going to have 3 or 4 singles from this album, just enjoy the 3 or 4 singles, presuming that they're the 3 or 4 best songs. There's not a ton more on the full length. Yeah.
Catch them on the radio, like Garth Brooks.
There you go.
I still love the guy. My review ends with a plea in which I said, direct it to him. I'm sure he's reading it. I said, you got a phenomenal voice, and I really hope that you find it again.
So, yeah, tweet him.
Tweet at the weekend.
If that is not getting a spin this week, then what?
Well, how about you guys go first if you have anything?
Bizarrely, I've been playing an old, new album from JoJo.
She's coming to the Academy.
Yeah, precisely. And that's what put it into my head. She of Leave right now, if anybody at home is trying to place it. It's generic pop. It's not very good. But that's frankly the only other album that I've listened to in the last few days. So,
well, I've been going backwards because we do have our Songs of the Year and Albums of the Year coming up in the next 2 episodes. So that's been what I've been concentrating on. And it's been most enjoyable.
I'm very, very excited about those episodes, by the way. Next week, our next episode, we will run down our top 20 songs of the year as decided by the 3 of us. So why 20 songs, guys? Because when I first said that we should do this, I was thinking 30 and I was thinking maybe 25. But I was shouted down by both Craig and Cullum, who believed that 20 was the way to go.
And it turned out to be an extremely difficult task. But I just feel for the podcast, we'll have more room to have an old chat. And we can also mention things that missed the cut. But I just think we don't want to be like, and another track, and another.
I do agree that, you know, if you're going to be ruthless, because, I mean, 2016 is a year that people will remember for a lot of bad things. But I think musically, in terms of what was released this year, I thought it was a very, very strong year. And I think if we're like, well, these are the 20 best songs that we feel are the 20 best ones in our first ever countdown on this show,
yeah,
I'm happy get to hype. Stand by it. And not to give away the game or anything, but what I will say is this, when we combined our lists and our kind of collective thing, the number one track surprised me.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's interesting.
But it's arguably a worthy winner, and we'll get there next week with the week after being albums. In terms of albums that you can listen to this year, every time the show kicks off, apart from themed episodes on occasion, the musical sting that you hear is by a friend of mine. It's actually by my old band, would you believe? Sights Distorted, the name of the track is Linear. And in that band, which is kind of a permanently on hiatus project, my good friend David O'Brien is essentially the chief kind of engineer of that whole makeup. He's pretty much taught himself how to become a producer. I'm very, very impressed by what he comes up with. He has just put the finishing touches on his new project. It's a personal project. It's called Envoy. And it's a 10-track record, thank you, Dave, in which it's very hard to describe. It's very challenging, it's very rewarding, it's kind of pop meets industrial, which is kind of what he's all about. And I've heard it, I think it's fantastic. I'm biased, of course, but I like to think that if I'd never heard this thing before and I heard it for the first time, I would have been blown away by it. I think he's done something very, very special. That album is called, and this is an album title for you, the album is called Bleached Apostle.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, man. It opens up with the first track in the record is called Kanye's Track, in which Kanye West gets some dialogue before we jump into it. I would say for fans of Nine Inch Nails, Marilyn Manson, David Bowie, Mushroomhead, and again, if you like your pop music, there's a lot of kind of inflections in that regard, give it a go. If you like what you hear now, I'm going to play you the title track as our exit music this week. Hit up his SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/envoy-2. Should be on his Bandcamp as well by the time this comes out. I'm so fucking proud of you, man. You've done an incredible, incredible piece of work with this record. This is Envoy. This is Bleached Apostle. My name is Dave Hanready. This has been No Encore. There will be No Encore. And we'll be back to you next week with the 20 best songs of 2016.
Yow!
HPN, the Headstuff Podcast Network. See headstuff.org for more details.
Hi guys, right. How's it going? Craig and Kanye this week. He's been up to a lot of different...
Trim your pubes, mate.
What the fuck is that?
I love your public Kanye service announcer.
We should respect them more.
You've been watching Planet Earth, haven't you?
Stay woke, Dave. Stay woke.
Got his admiral on.